I only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is the Beyond the Mouse podcast from the Front Row Network, the podcast where we talk all things Disney. And we have had several of these recently because we have all of these brand new Disney properties that are really propping up the summer box office. We are talking the live action reimagining of The Lion King, directed by Jon Favreau. Penguins wear pajamas? Yeah, something like that.
I love this.
This is horribly offensive.
Yes. Why don't we start over? No. Okay.
We love Swahili, and absolutely, we have so many
Jumbo
Swahilese.
Is that Swahili?
Listeners.
I don't, it is, right? It means hello.
It should be. Anyway, my name is Craig, and I am joined by my two co-hosts, Brett Rutherford.
Hi.
Vanessa Ferguson.
Hello.
And as
Jumbo.
I mentioned,
Jumbo.
This is our full disclosure on the brand new Lion King. So if you have not seen this movie, I would definitely recommend that you go out and see it. It's crushing all sorts of records, and Brett has the whole list of all the records it's crushing. But it made $191 million in opening weekend, which is the largest July release ever, along with the largest opening weekend for any of these live action reimaginings. So definitely go out and see this, but our spoilers will begin in 3, 2, 1.
Mufasa dies.
Oh, Mufasa does die twice.
Oh my gosh.
They show it twice.
That's right. They did show it twice. It hurt both times.
Can I tell you?
Oh my gosh.
This is the first movie that three of us have seen together.
Yes.
And I have some observations. Uh-oh. Just at the start. One, it's so great to go to a movie with Brett. Because Brett gives you so much popcorn.
Yeah.
He wants to make sure you're comfortable. I'm surprised he didn't give us blankets.
I know.
It was so great. He brings you napkins. He brings you popcorn. Mm-hmm. Refills the popcorn bucket before the movie even starts.
Yes.
So going to see a movie with Brett.
Yeah.
A-okay.
Well, hey. Thank you, AMC.
Endless popcorn bucket.
What was funny about the popcorn bucket is that you set it next to me and you're like, if I leave this here, will you eat some? And I thought you were wanting me to. And I'm like, oh yes, I will graze like a horse. I will never stop.
Yes.
And then that, I guess that meant that you were not afraid you weren't going to have enough popcorn.
No, I wasn't afraid. I was like going,
I
was being a good host to get more popcorn. I was host of the popcorn bucket. So.
And my observation, Craig thinks I bring hamburgers to to the theater when I say I have Whoppers.
She said I have Whoppers. And I just assumed she was joking. So I've been listening to this new podcast. We don't need to go into it, but it's not new. It's been out since 2015. It's new to me, called Hello from the Magic Tavern. And Burger King prominently plays in that podcast.
Wow.
So maybe that's why when you said I have Whoppers, then I thought obviously she means the Whoppers that you would get from a Burger King.
Yeah, no, just the little candy Whoppers. And I shook them. And I didn't realize how crunchy they were either until I put one in my mouth. I was like, oh, no.
Well, yes, they were allowed candy, as it turns out to be.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
So here's my Vanessa observation.
Uh-oh.
She goes through an emotional roller coaster
when watching
a movie.
Oh, my gosh.
I have never seen anyone experience
Mufasa
a movie.
Died.
Yes.
I have never seen anyone experience a movie the way that you experience a movie.
Yeah.
It really is a sight.
The reason why I was covering my
face.
I told
you she should have a camera on her at all times.
I was covering my face because I was trying not to sob loudly because it was coming.
Yeah.
Because I'll do this thing where I'm like, why? And I was trying not to do that because that theater was full. So I was trying to be silent and just covering my face
crying.
And my.
But even the laughing, everything, you
the laughing,
you go
I do
on,
laugh very loud.
Yes,
I do.
Good.
Yes.
You ride that roller coaster all the way through the movie, and I appreciate that.
Where were all my laughers at that theater, by the way? I felt like I was really loud, and like there was not. Usually there's like one other person who will laugh loudly.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anyone. It was just.
I snorted. Be our guest.
You yelled. Yelled, and I think you realized that you were yelling, and then you stopped what you were going to say. You went, bring And I think you're going to say, bring it.
I didn't say bring it.
Stopped.
No, you didn't hear the bit.
Laughed.
Well, yeah.
You stopped yourself.
It was your overall experience. See how much fun we can have together?
You have the best giggle, by the way. And it encourages me to laugh more.
That was fun.
Good.
So we have to do that again. Hopefully this was not the first or the last time. This was the first time, but hopefully it will not be the last.
Exactly.
Because it's like the first Disney thing we've all done together.
Oh my gosh, it's only been 127 years.
Yeah. So anyway, more to come in the future. But yes, so I will start off by giving my impressions, and then I'll let the two of you go. But my first impressions of this movie is that when I look at a live-action reimagining, I think, do I want to, if given the opportunity to watch the live-action reimagining or watch the original, what would I choose? And so some examples, Cinderella, I would easily pick the remake over the original. To me, the remake is wonderful. Aladdin, I think I would still choose the original. Robin Williams is my guy. I was gushing all over Will Smith. I really enjoyed his performance, but Robin Williams is my guy. Beauty and the Beast, I would much rather watch the original because there were some choices made in the live action that I didn't agree with. This movie, I think I would like to watch the remake over the original.
And
it's just because it is so visually stunning. And there were some moments where, in particular, it seemed to happen with Scar more than anybody else, where like the computer jumped a little bit. So you got a sense that it was all digitally done. But the fact that they were putting all these animals together on screen like that, just absolutely incredible. Also, I enjoyed the more narrative that they gave us because this was closer to 2 hours. The original is an hour and a half, so you did get some extended scenes, maybe almost like deleted scenes from the original. Of course, it didn't change the story much, but I didn't think it was going to change the story much. It seems like a lot of the critique of the movie is that they didn't do enough to change the story. And it's like, critics, what do you want? Because as soon as they change something in the story, that becomes the critique, right?
Right.
But then I think it's all trumped by Billy Eichner and his performance in this. I'm sorry, Nathan Lane, but you are no longer Timon in my mind because that man just stole my heart. It was so great. So that's where I'm at. I would actually go back and likely when I have Disney Plus and I have the option of watching both of these movies, I think I would prefer to watch the remake. But Vanessa, what are your first impressions?
My first impression is that I really, really love this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's so funny. The humor, the lines, like the thing I left with was who wrote the script? Because the script is so genius. It's contemporary. It's a little meta. It doesn't change a lot. Like you said, the story doesn't really change, but the humor, you can't just recycle the same jokes. You just can't. It's not as funny. So they made it their own. They wrote new jokes, and that was perfect. It was so great. It's just what I hoped Jon Favreau would give us. And I am going to see this, but I want to take my mom so I can laugh really loud and embarrass her when she watches it. So I will see it. And I don't understand why people are hating it. It doesn't take anything away from your childhood. Nothing's wrong with your childhood. You still have your childhood. This is just another like take on this story, and it's really good. I loved it.
I think it's running in Brett, not to trample your first impressions or stampede upon them. But
anyway, sorry.
I think Stampede. That because we've had Dumbo and then Aladdin and then this, and we're going to have Maleficent and Disney Plus is going to have Lady and the Tramp, the idea of these live action reimaginings is really picking up some scrutiny. And whether or not we want these or we needed these or are they just cash grabs or what are they? And in a way, they are cash grabs because Disney is still a business. But at the same time, we've talked a lot on this podcast about how each of these movies, whether they are basically a mirror image of the original or they take it in a new direction, it seems like they've all proved why they are there or their purpose. And if you don't look at the visuals of this, I've read online that this is the greatest cinematic visual achievement since Avatar. And I would agree with that, because the photorealism in this is just absolutely out of this world.
Yeah.
And so even if you don't like that Jon Favreau stuck to mainly the big beats of the movie, use the same soundtrack, everything like that, you need to at least appreciate the fact that visually this is a huge step forward, even from Jungle Book just a few years ago. So, Brett, what are your first impressions?
Okay. My first impression was I didn't want to go see it. Okay. What? I know these were the things that I sort of have difficulties telling you people, because you love the original and it was not my favorite.
The original my gosh, was not I know. Your favorite?
I know.
What?
Gasp.
What?
Audible gasp.
Wow.
No. It, you know, like in the Disney Renaissance of Little Mermaid to The Lion King or whatever, I'm like going, it's like fourth. I'm like going,
wow.
Little Mermaid and Aladdin were much higher than this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There might be a taint of the sort of corporate culture and the whole, dare I say, Jeffrey Katzenberg Disney issue with The Lion King and all this, which, you know, The Lion King was kind of his baby. And kudos to everyone, including Jeffrey Katzenberg, during the time of the creation of the original. However, you know, the things did not work out well for everyone involved in that situation, and he didn't get... well, anyway, that's a whole other story.
What's better, Zootopia or Lion King?
Well, that definitely would be Lion King, but...
Okay, I just want to make sure we knew where we stand.
Sorry. Anyway. So that was my big confession, okay? And I had already confessed Vanessa that I had not seen the Jungle Book remake.
But you've seen it now, right?
No,
you were supposed to watch it as soon as we were done with The Lion King.
It's my new Inside Out. Yes, I haven't seen it yet. Heavy sigh. So I came to this movie. Well, I even told Vanessa, I'm like going, if I fall asleep, don't, you know, wake me. So,
which was unacceptable, and I said I would wake you.
But I was so surprised.
Yeah.
I'm like going, I loved it. And as Craig said, I would rather watch this than the original.
Yeah. You even gave a Z snap in the fight scene. You were Z snapping all over the place.
I was, yes. Well, you know, yeah, so it was...
You were into
it. I was mm-hmm. very into it. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. I'm like going... I was watching with the critic's eye going, yeah, Ryan, entertain me. Yes, what does this film have to give? Apparently it gives you everything.
Well, what's interesting about it is, like, I was really interested to see Just Can't Wait to Be King, because it was one of my favorite songs growing up. It's one of my son's favorite songs. He loves it. And it has so many visuals in the animation, so many colors and pops of color. I didn't know how they were going to do that. But what they did was they kind of shot this movie almost as though it was like part of the Disney Nature series at some points. And so they still had the flamingos and they had the hippos and they had the giraffes and everything else, but Simba just wasn't crawling all over them and jumping on their heads or whatever. He was just running through their legs and they were still getting lost. Like Zazu was still having a hard time keeping up with him. And so that was just so cool. It was so well done. And so I really, it's hard to know what some of the critics are seeing when they go and do their reviews. And I think part of it is, I was trying to pull up Box Office Mojo here, but Disney is just absolutely dominating the box office this summer. And really to the point where that is the reason why the summer box office is even remotely doing in the mediocre category, because all the other movies are really performing very poorly. Now, some people would say it's because Disney's taking up all the oxygen. I would say if you want to have a strong box office, then you're going to need these movies, obviously, because people just aren't flocking to whatever. I know.
Anyway,
I know our thread, they were talking about some alligator movie that was getting good reviews, some horror movie.
I'm not going to see an alligator movie. No.
Pass on the alligator movie. It's,
yeah.
But, you know, so the top movies now of 2019 are all Disney properties, and that's at the worldwide box office and at the domestic box office. So, yeah, you can hate on Disney, but at the same time, they're really part of the reason why Hollywood is surviving in what has been sort of down movie years with streaming services and things like that coming online. So, you know, just back off it, I guess, is my message.
Yes.
Get out of here. I like it when you say, get out of here with that.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
We had that question when the movie was over. I was like going, why are they hating on this? And I mean, my response was that I think that there's jealousy out there, you know, how mm-hmm. can, I mean, this giant corporation is, as you say, taking up all the oxygen and making all this money. And I think there's a little hate. And the other thing, honestly, you know, with the 27th reimagining of a film, the thing, kind of my takeaway when I was leaving was I want to see something original from Disney. And mm-hmm. I don't know that that's from Disney Animation, or even, you know, Pixar's coming up with something new here, mm-hmm. but Disney. Mm-hmm. Disney, I want something new from
I totally
them.
Get that. And yeah. I think that that's a valid critique, but I did go back and look. If you think about in the last decade, and I think it might just be outside of the decade, but starting with The Princess and the Frog, we've gotten The Princess and the Frog, we've gotten Tangled, we've gotten Moana, we've gotten Frozen, we've gotten Zootopia, Wreck-It Ralph, all of these movies that were original ideas and original properties. Now, granted, much like what Walt did, mm-hmm. they're borrowing from Grimm's fairy tales or whatever the case may be, but putting their own spin on it. So we know that Frozen is the Snow Queen, we know that Tangled is Rapunzel, but still bringing an original take to those. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we did have a line of sequels here, you know, with Wreck-It Ralph 2 and now going into Frozen 2. But I do that on D23, I do think at D23 next month, which you're so excited about, I do think that we're going to get some more original properties. And like, there's been a big swell in the last decade of really solid original Disney movies. And so much like Michael Eisner decided that the way to get more money out of a property was to sequelize it to death, and put it right direct to home video because that was still so new. Bob Iger's, obviously the decision has been made that these live action reimaginings are the way to help make some additional funds, maybe in a way alter the stories to be more current. And then, you know, you get the box office haul out of something like A Lion King that's going to make $1.5 billion. And you can then take that and fund those other properties within your studio. So that's, you know, that's where I'm at with these. And I know we've talked a lot about that. So let's dive actually into the movie. And it is directed by Jon Favreau. So we want to mention that my absolute love for that man. So Jon, if you ever want to be on the podcast,
oh my gosh. Oh, I would die. I would just die.
Literally, I would die. Actually, if we had the opportunity to ever talk to him and they were like, no, you have to be on LA tomorrow, I'd be like, okay, I'm making this happen. But we won't forget that you were in Spider-Man Homecoming like Gwyneth Paltrow did. But Jon Favreau really brings it again. He did such great work with Jungle Book. Obviously, visionary director in that sense, especially from a story standpoint and from a visual standpoint. I mean, even looking back at Iron Man, but movies like Elf, he's always done a really good job of mm-hmm. bringing that visual story to you in his films, and just an absolute incredible tale to see. And he lived up to the original, and in my sense, he passed the original. But at the very least, he lived up to what that movie was from the 90s. So
can you imagine taking on that?
The Lion King?
The next thing I'm going to do is The Lion King.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
And I think, I'm wondering amazing. If what people had, maybe what their issue was, is that, you know, The Lion King's very musical. It's very kind of showy in that way. And I was looking back to The Jungle Book, and Favreau's reimagining of that is not a big musical show. It has music, but it's
more, cut out most of the songs though.
Yeah, it's more realistic singing. And especially in The Lion King, there's some speak singing happening. There's not a lot of big belty songs from the characters. Yeah, I'm thinking of Be Prepared because Jeremy Irons and Jim Cummings, who also helped voice that, they're very theatrical in their interpretation. Mm-hmm. Be Prepared is much more subtle and very menacing. I thought Scar was way creepier and manipulative in this film.
It was kind of like how they took Jafar and they made him more Machiavellian, more manipulative. Mm-hmm. I thought Chiwetel Ejiofor brought that same level of creepiness to the character. I will say that one of our co-hosts on the network, Ryan, had said that Scar was thrown away in this because it was a flat portrayal of Scar, and I disagree with that. I think it's a different take.
It's a little more serious performance. It was Shakespearean, and we're acting out Hamlet here, so it is. So I'm like, going, and it was subtle. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it was
more realistic. Yes. Like if it wasn't a lion,
if it was
people on stage or in a film, it would be like a very good portrayal.
Yes.
A very real portrayal.
Subtle. Yeah. Subtle, mm-hmm. not over the top.
Right. You know? I loved it. I thought it was really good.
I think it was bolstered by his supporting villains in the hyenas because they did not, I mean, they had obviously the funniness of the close talker or like the guy that wanted to be next to the other one, but they didn't have an Ed. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't the slapstick nature of the hyenas, and so that really made them more menacing. Mm-hmm. And who played the lead hyena? Because she was excellent. I have it right here,
Florence Kasumba. She played Shensi.
She was so scary to me. Yeah. Like her voice, she did such a great job with her voice acting.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you guys know this, but hyenas, the female is the lead of the group in nature.
She's the alpha.
So she's the alpha, and I like that they made her like a total... Like,
yeah, because she took the Whoopi Goldberg role, I mean, really way different performance.
Yeah, it was awesome. She's really scary.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
To quote Jessica Rabbit, she was drawn that way.
We started to jump into some of the characters. And, of course, we have James Earl Jones reprising his role as Mufasa. And it almost seems like they almost used some of the audio tracks from the original at some moments. Just because it sounded so identical. I will say I was surprised because when they announced that James Earl Jones had done this, and this might be slightly controversial, but he's getting up there in age. And when he had to say some lines as Darth Vader in Rogue One, I thought he sounded old. And in this movie, to me, he didn't sound old. And I don't know if that was the sound editing or what it was, but to me, he sounded like Mufasa did in 1994. You know, he, and enough so to where really, unless they had added in some of the extra little bits in the lines or names in the lines and things like that, he sounded like it was the track from 1994.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if we have too much more to say about him because he was reprising that role. I don't know that anybody could have been Mufasa except for him.
Just his death was just, it felt so much worse.
Yes. Well, I knew what was coming. My face was turned away from the screen, and I was thinking, oh, Vanessa, this is going to be bad.
I don't like to see animals getting hurt.
You don't, yeah. So I'm like going, she is triggered.
So there was an article online I wanted to bring up because, and I know I keep bringing up the critiques of this movie, but really this is a lower scoring movie on Rotten Tomatoes for Disney Studios. It was somewhere in the 50s when it came out. I don't know where it's at now. But Collider, they posted an article. One of their reviewers said that the death was hilarious and it made them laugh out loud because seemed so unrealistic. So I had read that headline, only the headline, before we went in, because it was on Facebook or whatever, before we went into the movie. So I didn't want to say that to either of you before I saw the movie, that this was a critique, because I wanted to see for myself what they were going for. And I have no clue. I truly have no idea what that reviewer was seeing in that death scene, because it seemed, you know, like they had him twist in the midair because, of course, a cat would try to land on his feet. Like, everything about it seemed very real. So I just wanted to get your responses to that because, again, I don't want to bash on all the other critics that didn't like this movie, but at the same time, this was one that stuck out to me, a criticism that I just didn't feel was valid.
I can't really speak to that because I'm with you. I don't see what they're saying. But I think in general, we as a society have to be very careful to just not be negative for the sake of being negative. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it, stand-up, sometimes it's like trying to be funny, and stand-up's all about like pointing out what's weird about the world, and that can come across as negative. But it just seems like people went in looking for something to hate. Like, yes, I literally saw posts of people saying, like, articles of, I'm trying to get people to not let their children go see this because it will ruin. Nothing's being, what is this negativity? Just enjoy it. It's an enjoyable film. And yeah, that scene I thought was well done. I don't see what's so laughable or comical about it. I thought the film as a whole was very realistic and beautiful and well done.
Okay, well, you know, I going into this, I had issues with talking animals. Real, you know.
Yeah, so some of y'all have not watched Milo and Otis, and it shows.
Like going
Homeward Bound.
Still,
although
they didn't move their lips though.
I didn't even notice.
See, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I'm like going, I just want to hear their thoughts, you know, or why don't we just not have any dialogue at all and just watch this, you know? But you know, I got over that whatever phobia and the anthropomorphizing animals with talking animals. No, I don't know. How do we anyway? That so I got over it.
So you're ready for cats now. No, that's another podcast. Ooh, sorry.
I don't think anyone's ready for cats.
I'm ready. Well, that's another podcast.
They're not just cats.
Or Mr. Rogers, don't get me started. Oh, anyway. Yeah. Well, yeah, so I'm just, I was surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did. That was kind of a little bit of a takeaway, and we're not quite there yet. But let's go through some of more of the voice actors.
Sure. I think that we should probably give some props to young Nala and to young Simba. And I believe young Simba's name was J.D. McCrary. I thought he did a great job, and it seemed like that was him actually singing I Just Can't Wait to Be King, because Jonathan Taylor Thomas, I don't believe, actually sang the songs during the 94 movie. Sorry, JTT, if I am undercutting your role in The Lion King, but I don't think that he actually did. And so this seemed like that was done. And then Shahidi Wright Joseph was young Nala, and I thought that they had a really good chemistry, a really good interaction.
Yeah, that was cute.
She doesn't get to do nearly as much, and that's just part of the script. Nala kind of disappears after the elephant graveyard, but the young Simba, to me, he really, really did a great job with some good emotion during the death scene, and then also during the beginning of Hakuna Matata. I thought that he did a really great job with that. Anybody else that you wanted to call out?
Oh my gosh, Timon and Pumbaa.
I was kind of waiting for that one.
That's okay.
Can we talk John Oliver just a second before we get there? Because I think that John Oliver was tough for me when they mentioned him as a casting, because I only think of him as John Oliver. And it did take me out of the movie for just a second when he comes to do the morning report, the very first thing that he does, because it's like, man, that's John Oliver. But at the same time, I think after a while, they gave Zazu some additional lines, and I know you have one written down, so I don't know if you wanted to read it out that you...
Well, I like it because he says, I had a cousin who thought he was a woodpecker. He slammed his head into trees, and our beaks aren't built for it. He was concussed regularly.
it was how he said. There was like a...
Concussed regularly.
Sorry.
There was a beat before he said it, too. So it was just like... beat, and then he goes, he was concussed regularly. So good. But I did really enjoy Zazu. I thought he was the nice part about this is that it was written in a way that allowed for those dry humor moments.
She's gone.
We lost her.
When he's trying to just drag Scar, and he's like, did I tell you about my cousin? He's a woodpecker.
We've lost her. She's gone. She's gone.
Guys, she's gone forever. Let's go see this movie, okay? I got to have someone else to talk about it with.
So then before we get to Donald Glover and to Beyonce, let's talk about Timon and Pumbaa, because this combination, when I first heard the soundtrack, I was so unimpressed with Seth Rogen's voice in Hakuna Matata on the soundtrack.
On the soundtrack.
I was like, this is going to be so terrible. Yeah. Like, why did they cast this man? But then in the actual film, I didn't mind it nearly as much. I don't know if it was like because of the visuals going on at the same time or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But God, those two together were just so great.
So funny.
So funny.
Billy Eichner for president. That's my new campaign I'm launching.
Heavens. Our new phrase is, okay, in as few words as possible, how are you?
I love that.
That's so good.
Yes. I care, sort of.
Yeah.
Care, yes. I lost it. No, I lost it on the Ma Chère Mademoiselle. I snort laughed for that.
Yes.
And then when they started to sing it, I'm just like going,
Well, I wondered what they were going to do. So the scene we're talking about is when Timon and Pumbaa have to distract the hyenas. Yes. And in the animated movie, Timon is in a luau costume.
Right.
And it's really funny. So I'm like, well, they can't do the same joke again. What are they going to do? And suddenly Timon is singing Be Our Guest. And it was, oh my gosh, the theater just erupted. It was so funny.
Maybe better than Ewan McGregor did.
Way better. It was so good.
It was so well done.
Oh, well. Those are just thoughts.
It was so great.
I like the carcasses line when he's... So Timon and Pumbaa, they're riding up and they see Simba's... Pride Land, which is like completely destroyed by the hyenas at this point. And I think, what does Timon say? Like, nice.
Oh, I like what you've done with the place.
It's a lot heavy of carcass.
Heavy
on the carcass. Yeah.
So good, you guys.
That performance is really one of those that's just going to stick with me for so long.
I can't wait to watch it again for those lines.
Absolutely crushed it.
Yeah, and Pumbaa too. Seth Rogen.
Yes.
The chubby line. He's never going to run away from fighting a bully. Yes. That was so funny. And every now and then you hear his iconic Seth Rogen laugh, which makes me laugh.
Yes.
So
what's that line that you liked from the scene they released? We'll call him Fred.
Oh, right. He's like, oh, it's a little lion. And then we're going to call him Fred. Oh, my gosh. I watched that several times, and I cried several times, laughing so hard.
I need to call out the extended version of the Lion Sleeps Tonight, where all the other animals joined in with them.
Yes.
That was one of my favorite parts of the movie. It was so good. So well done. I can't say enough good things about the combo of those two. And they had a lot to live up to because Timon and Pumbaa are so iconic.
Sure.
To use Jeremy's word. And, you know, Nathan Lane does a wonderful job as Timon in particular. And to me, Billy Eichner just absolutely... It was a different kind of Timon.
Yeah, it was different.
It was so, so well done. So any other comments on Timon and Pumbaa?
Little baby Pumbaa. Is adorable.
Oh, so
I can't.
Adorable.
My heart couldn't handle that part.
So adorable. How about now? Let's talk Donald Glover and Beyonce. So they obviously gave Beyonce a lot more to do in this movie, and for the most part, I appreciated that because you get a huge mega star like Beyonce, and Nala doesn't really have that large of a role other than getting Simba back to the Pride Land, right? So we got to see a really cool scene of her sneaking out of the Pride Land, which was not involved in the animated series because you always thought, like, are they letting her patrol or what are the, how did she get there? You know, it just kind of happens to move the plot along. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really neat to see her like actually having to sneak out of the Pride Lands. Mm-hmm. And then also I think if I had a gripe, it comes in Beyonce's character, but I want to hear what your thoughts are on Beyonce first before I jump into my gripe.
Well, you know, I was so into it. I was so into this, you know, into the story and the characters, not the voice actors. And then I went, oh, that's right, it's Beyonce. You know, at the point of the movie, you know, when her character, Nala?
Nala.
Nala.
Yeah, that's right. Nala has been on screen for a while, I'm like going, oh, that's right, it's Beyonce. Oh my gosh, you know. So I'm just like going, which I thought was a good thing. I'm like going, you know, it wasn't it. How sometimes, you know, there's kind of stunt casting sort of thing, which it kind of you would kind of think, you know, it was. But I thought it was. I thought she was great.
I thought it was solid. The only thing, because it is Beyonce, when she's telling all the other lionesses to fight, I, in my own head, inserted, who run the world? Girls. Who run this mother? Girl. And I'm like, fight, fight! And like have that soundtrack in the back of my mind while that scene's going on. Yeah. But that's just me and my own personal problems.
Well,
so.
And their problems with Scar is all the single ladies. Anyway, so.
There you go. Oh, but that little new like side story of him being rejected by Sarabi and her marrying Mufasa.
Alfie Woodard, who we didn't really mention, but
yes, she's solid. Very great. She's yeah. solid. But that like, no, I will not eat with you. I was like, ooh, this is taking this to another level.
Well, it was kind of like, I mean, in, I guess I don't really, this is going to sound really not bright about this, but I'm like going, in the lion world, in a pride, there is the lion. Does he have multiple
cubs?
Yes, from various
lionesses
partners. Yes.
I don't know if they're like
is that
no?
No, they don't. They're monogamous.
I'm going to say that they are monogamous because okay. that's the world I want to live in.
Okay,
one lioness to we one to, lion.
I don't know. Well, it was man. Kind of like that was one of the you know. I mean, one of the things there is that, you know, the land is failing because, you know, well, because of right. it's being overrun by, well, bad management, basically. But there are no new cubs coming around either. So
well, you get to see that.
You're not
a lot.
Getting I'm any. Not, sorry, I'm Scar.
Not, by so, my mind is not going to go there. I'm shutting
I think
it
we're
going
to have to look that up. Mm-mm. And I should have looked
I'm
up before
Googling
now.
I'm not Googling
anything. Anyway.
You definitely get that visual more about the Pride Lands really being decimated because it's really, you know, not really there because it's CGI. I understand that whole
so
argument
it
about
so real,
it's not live action, whatever, because, and I get that, I totally get it, but you've got to see this movie. I mean, like, you know, I know you've already seen this because we mentioned the spoilers, but it really does truly seem like, you know, that so, this is more than just a CGI world.
Everything it is.
Well,
everything.
it did say special thanks to Disney's Animal Kingdom. So I don't know if they filmed some of the background shots at Animal Kingdom.
Was it like did they do motion capture with animals or?
I don't know.
like
so real.
You know, I mean, like, did they do? Is was it like you know?
I can't wait
were
to
the
see
backgrounds,
the behind the scenes.
Were the backgrounds?
Yeah, ooh, behind the scenes. Then we'll
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Then we'll know
might
what
might be
happened.
Worth because this will be on Disney Plus probably opening day. I would guess they yeah. haven't announced that yet. Like Captain Marvel,
but
Aladdin,
see the,
those movies
behind
are
the scenes
be,
and all the stuff that
right.
you have
so it's
to
almost like
the DVD for.
That's what I was gonna say. It's almost like I kind of want to buy the digital version
yes.
of this just because
that's
a good point. iTunes extras.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There goes more money.
So I did have my dad joke that she's Queen Bay or Queen Bee
yeah.
at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciated that because Nala's queen, right? So
yeah.
My gripe comes in using the song Spirit in the middle of the movie because here's my deal with that. I understand they want her to win an Oscar for that song, and I think that she's going to have a really good shot at it depending on what's in Frozen 2 and out later this year. But it took me out of it a bit because here's Nala not actually singing this song, but it's her over the animals running back to the Pride Lands. And there's another song that I just appreciate so much more that I wish would have been in this movie, and that was at the credits of He Lives in You. And I wish that they would have switched those songs, put Beyonce's song in the credits, which where it still would have qualified for an Oscar, by the way, and then put He Lives in You, that Swahili version of He Lives in You, in that moment. But Brett's shaking his head.
Yeah.
Tell me why I'm wrong.
No, I don't say. No, I would never say you're wrong to your face. But I would. but I would say I just found that, you know, in a film that we know, we can sing the hot, you know, the everything, to find something new was like a breath of fresh air right here. And I'm like going, well, yes, Beyonce, go ahead and sing this song, because I just, I thought it was fresh.
I thought it was
fresh. I thought it was so nice.
Well, there were so many runs in this movie too. They went out for a marathon during this.
Donald
Glover.
All of them.
Childish Gambino.
You know, all of them.
I love him.
All of them were, getting there.
I agree with you, though. I love He Lives in You. It's from the Lion King Broadway show.
And it was in Lion King 2.
Which that was a directed video. Did that come out after the Lion King Broadway show?
That's a great question. I'm not sure the answer. I do know it was direct to video.
Here's what I can tell you. I listened to the Broadway soundtrack first. Then I saw Lion King 2 and I said, oh, that's where they stuck that song. Because that song is like the highlight of Lion King 2. Other than that, you really don't need to see Lion King 2. But that song is amazing.
Allegedly. I think
it's the best song ever. And I was waiting for that to be in that spot as well. When I heard Spirit, okay, fine. I like that song too, but it's not the same as He Lives in You. That's a great song.
I get it from a commercial aspect that having Beyonce in your movie, you want to give her a song to sing in the movie. Totally get it. But for me, it took me out of it a little bit just because that's when I saw that. I mean, I saw that as a decision made because they wanted to have Beyonce sing a solo.
And yet other people thought it was fresh.
Yes.
So, yes.
That's true. That's very true. So, I think we talked about many of the characters. We didn't really talk too much about Chiwetel Ejiofor. We brushed on him at the beginning. I would say that his singing left something to be desired, which is why they allowed him to speak, be prepared. But that was okay to me. They kind of actually truncated Be Prepared. It was a lot shorter in this version than it was in the actual animated film.
That is an iconic performance.
Absolutely. So let's move into talking about some of the other aspects or favorite scenes that we didn't touch on, and then we can start to wrap up with things like what didn't work for us, and then also what we see going forward. So Vanessa, are there any other scenes you wanted to touch on that we haven't talked about already?
Well, I am having trouble thinking of one.
Fair.
My biggest thing that I notice is that, and I don't know if it's supposed to be, it's not like this in Hamlet, I don't think, but it's so heavy and dark in the death scene and like leading up to, there's lightness in the first half because you're getting to know Mufasa and his relationship with the sun. That's very sweet and cute and stuff. But then Scar's getting really dark, and then you have this really heavy moment, and then desert scene. Simba's walking through the desert, which is just like heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But the contrast in the first half and the second half is just so drastic that it was an emotional roller coaster. Like, I wasn't quite prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there crying? Weren't there little kids crying during part of the really?
I don't know. I was crying. Bit, I was sobbing.
And you are a little kid.
I have a great depth for empathy. So, mm-hmm. So, Simba's walking through the desert all alone. I'm like, that lion's going to die there. There's no way he doesn't have any water. There's no cactuses around. So, literally trying to figure out this lion's going to survive.
He's going to eat some bugs.
Didn't know how to do that yet. And then he finally meets Simba, and I was really, really glad that part was so funny, because had it not been, if it had really just laid flat, oh my gosh, that movie would have just sunk for me.
Five more seconds of buzzards and you would have been done.
I would have been dead. I would have been done. The only thing that I thought was a little different, I was going, was the fur scene where Simba loses his fur, adult Simba loses his fur, mm-hmm. and then it gets into the water, mm-hmm. and then it gets picked up by a bird, and then it giraffe eats it, and then we're going to skip a step and just have a dung beetle pushing the dung. We're going to let imagination figure out how the fur got in the dung beetle from the giraffe to the, we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So then it's rolling along, and then it floats off. And Rafiki picks it up. I'm like, do you know where that fur has been? It just escaped from a dung ball.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
It's the circle of life.
That was definitely the Disney nature portion of the movie to me. And it did seem like maybe it went on just a
symbiosis.
Just a,
it,
snippet too long.
That's what I felt. I was like, how much longer is this going to go on? We've got the ants carrying the dung beetle fur now. And yeah. And then like Rafiki knows that's him. Couldn't be fur from anyone else. It's definitely from Simba. Oh,
that was my question. When did Rafiki become Yoda? You know?
It reminded me when he starts fighting. It reminded me of like Yoda fighting in Star Wars 2.
So that took me out. So that was my take.
The original.
He was like, you know, he was doing his little giggly thing, and I'm like going, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's Yoda.
He is definitely more like Yoda in this. I would give you that.
Thank you for giving that to me, Greg.
Anytime. Another favorite scene that I have, and I have to apologize to the two of you. So you were very gracious in allowing me to go to my recliner theater that I absolutely love. But the audio wasn't quite what we wanted it to be at the beginning of the movie. And this is the scene that I may be speaking out of turn here, but you saw some of this at D23 last time, and you said it was shot for shot, the exact same opening. And that is such an impressive way to bring you into that world, to show you that. And I just wish that the audio in our theater was better.
I think you and I were both like, wait for it. And then you hear,
like literally that volume.
And we were like,
what? Yes.
That was kind of a letdown. Yeah, it's gotta be blasting.
Yes, blast.
So maybe if we saw it at the other theater.
Maybe this would have been more to go see it in IMAX.
IMAX. I should see it in IMAX.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about going back to see it in IMAX.
Because I'm used to bigger screens now that I've been spoiled by that.
Yeah. But those reclining chairs are what gets you.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen it yet, maybe that's something that you consider is going to a fancier theater so you can really take in that sound and the visuals, because this is a film that warrants that.
Yes.
We've kind of combined our favorite scenes and what didn't work for us, but Brett, do you have either favorite scenes?
That was my Yoda question.
Just the Yoda question?
When did he become Yoda? Oh, yeah. But that was my big thing. Other than that, I'm like going, I was surprised I was so engaged in the whole... So I'm like going...
Yeah, and you know the fight scenes too. I mean, I was like, are they really going to be that engaging? Am I really going to be into it? Because it's like kitty cats fighting and stuff.
It's like, you know.
But, you know.
It was super cute kitty cats.
But it really was like fight. And I'm like, you know, one good nice slap with the claws and one of those lions are going down.
I just think that if this doesn't get acknowledgement in the award season with all the visual effects that it did, then I mean,
what are we even doing here?
I will resign from the Academy. Oh, but I need to be invited first.
This is a very interesting question, and I want your opinions on it because, of course, we have no say in it.
Okay.
But Brett, does this? Is this open for nomination in the Best Animated Feature category?
Ooh. Huh.
Because that's come around now. Really? That question of, is this truly an animated movie? Because in a way, I mean, it is. It's photorealism, but it's animated, right? Hmm. I mean, CGI, just like another CGI
movie. Hey, whatever gets you the Oscar.
Right, but I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I just told you, whatever gets you the Oscar. I'm like going...
Is that why you put some actors in the supporting category, even though they are the star and all that? Yeah.
There's no politics involved in any of these award ceremonies.
No politics.
None whatsoever, so... Mm.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay, too. I mean, Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I doubt if it makes for Best Picture. So.
Oh, no. I think after it was lambasted by the critics, it won't. But I'm just wondering if it should be considered for Best Animated Feature.
It probably won't be. Because that would be opening up a whole nother area for that particular group of powers that be in animation circles.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Disney, most of the time, there's a campaign or a push behind what's going to be nominated or whatever, and I don't see them, because they're calling this a live-action reimagining, and they're kind of disregarding the fact that it's truly not live-action, this you know, I don't think that they're going to campaign for it in that particular award.
They'll just cash their checks.
With Frozen 2, right?
Yeah, Frozen 2.
They've already got a good one.
Toy Story 4.
Oh, Toy Story 4, that's right.
Yeah, so they'll be up against each
I'm
other.
I'm sorry, did you say good one? I'm sorry.
I know.
You guys in your Toy Story 4, I made Forky with my son.
See? Well, that's good.
Yeah, we made Forky. They had like a creativity
set. That's cool.
Thing.
I do like Forky.
And so, yeah, just stay
that's
away.
Okay.
Stay
I'm
away
not.
From
what?
Me. Don't be
I'm
so
not.
Mean.
I think, okay, here, Brent and I were talking about this. What? About summer. Oh, wow. That's Forky. Wow. Look at you. You did
oh,
it.
My gosh.
I did make like, Forky. There's a creativity set that you can find on.
Really?
On.
There was
Amazon.
Merchandise about.
There was merchandise.
There was
for
merchandise
Toy Story
for Toy Story.
Could you
for trash.
For Toy Story.
Why didn't you just
throw
it in the
so
trash?
Cute. You know what he does?
What?
He picks up Forky and he goes, "I'm Forky. I'm trash."
Oh.
I was like, "Oh my gosh, you're melting my heart because you
so
remember
cute.
You remembered
he's
the
adorable.
Movie."
Okay.
But anyway,
where are we? Lion King.
Lion King.
To tie in though, Toy Story and this whole movie, Disney movie thing. I've been calling this like the summer of Disney. We had three films. Mm-hmm. Aladdin, I think, was a really good opener. Mm-hmm. Toy Story 4 kind of made me feel a little mellow. I think it was the storyline's a little bit on the sadder side for the ending. I'm just really glad because things were looking a little bleak with all these critics' reviews with Lion King. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just really glad we had such a fun time mm-hmm. and really enjoyed it as much as we did because that's how I wanted to end this summer season. I know we've got one more.
Artemis Fowl. And then you have Maleficent.
I don't know if I'm going to enjoy Artemis Fowl.
That's not this summer.
In the August. Oh, it's August.
Oh, Artemis Fowl is, but not Maleficent.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
in October.
Yeah. So, yes. And that's fine. I'm okay with Maleficent in October. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm
but
ready for that.
This is our kind of our final summer.
You forgot
season.
Dumbo.
No,
well.
No, that was in spring, and I didn't see it. So
the spring of tears, yep. Dumbo and Endgame. If you want yep. to expand it to that,
yeah.
But okay, so thank you both for your thoughts on The Lion King, and thank you for listening to us. We have a lot of really cool things coming up. These two both have independent trips planned. They didn't plan behind my back or anything, but
gosh.
Vanessa, you're on the way to Walt Disney World.
Orlando.
And maybe you can mm-hmm. do a brief, like, even a solo trip report. Just grab your phone or something. Or
oh,
I don't know. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I'm
going to
have some downtime, yeah. I can record from the Magic Kingdom, yo.
It'd be kind of fun if you recorded, like, little snippets of... Like what, you know, like just your thoughts or whatever, and then
okay.
we kind of combine them. Not to tell you that you have to do work while
you're... No, that's okay.
But, you know, just like if you have like a few minutes like where you can just like...
Yeah,
you
I
always
so
said
do
you
that.
Wanted to pretend like you're vlogging. I'm basically
I
telling you.
I do pretend like I vlog, and I never show
you're
anybody.
Ready, you're ready for it. You're ready for the big time, baby.
Because I think that...
you will be there to laugh at my jokes.
I think that
you
the feed
be
would... I think that the feed would really love
okay.
to hear that.
Okay.
At least
hungry.
I would want to listen to it. Because
we're hungry.
Done. Consider it done.
And then
it's
Brett.
Happening.
Yes.
We're at 29 days when we record this.
I think I say 28.
28
days. Because I don't count the day that I'm going.
To D23 Expo.
Well, yes. Ooh. First of all, it's 28 days to Disneyland.
Okay.
And Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And then D23 Expo, and we're finding out exactly how we get to get in lines and not get in lines and experience everything that is so exciting about D23 Expo 2019. So
excited for you. So keep a watch on our feeds. We'll share some of them to the Front Row Network, but also I know you're listening to this on the Front Row Network feed. Make sure you also like the Beyond the Mouse page on Facebook and follow along with our feed because we'll have some exclusive stuff on there and some special stuff.
Exclusive, you know.
Exclusive. So then after that, we get right into the fall. So we're going to have a D23 wrap-up show. We also have already recorded a cruise line show that will be dropping sometime in the next month.
Mm-hmm.
Vanessa and myself were joined by Julie Staley, which was a lot of fun. Sorry, Brett.
That's okay. That. I'm okay. With people having a good time at Disney when I'm not there.
And the fall the fall is always when I went to Walt Disney World, so I always say it's the best time to go, but there really is so much wonderful things to do. And so we're bring on people that have been recently, or we'll talk really in depth about some of the, I would love to do an episode just on the Halloween party. I know we've talked about it before, but it would just be really fun to just to do a deep
and
dive.
And all things that are new this
year. Stop. Guys, I'm trying not to get that ticket. So I will be there. I will be in Orlando for the first night of the Halloween party.
I've heard, though, that the first night... Now, okay, but listen to me.
I know, which I've done before.
This is why maybe you should go the first night, because all of the vloggers will be there, and that's when you can meet all of the vloggers.
I know. That's what I told Brett. I'm like, I'm trying not to go, because it's going to be so crowded with all the vloggers, because they're... I've been before, and what they like to do is they have their little PR thing with the Walt Disney World cast members and marketing staff, but then they're released out into the parks, and they're everywhere with their cameras, and they like to stake out their spots so they can get the best view, especially for the parade. So you are like competing with the best of the best for good parade viewing. And but if I go, see, Brett was encouraging me to go so I could tell you all what's going to happen at the Halloween party. But realistically, I know me. I know I'm just going to be following around like Tim Tracker trying to find him. And I'm not going to get you anything that you want to hear. I'm just going to be looking for vloggers that I know and love. So
well, that could be a fun trip anyway.
That would be fun.
Well, so we have a lot coming up. Again, I know if you're listening to the main feed of the Front Row Network, make sure to like our Beyond the Mouse feed on iTunes, on Spotify, on iHeartRadio, on TuneIn, on wherever you want to go, because we have infested the internet.
That's not a good word.
We're like the virus in Wreck-It Ralph 2. You can also see us on NPR Illinois. So you can find us on the nprillinois.org homepage. Why are you laughing so much?
I am not a virus.
We are everywhere the internet reaches, including NPR Illinois. We're a community voices podcast.
We are inevitable.
Thank you so much to them. But we better wrap it up before this completely goes off the rails. So, for the Beyond the Mouse podcast, I am Craig.
I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Brett.
And we will see you real soon on Pride Rock. No, just kidding. In the front row.
I can't wait to be king.
On Pride Rock.
I just can't wait to be king.